Dark Wraith Publishing presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 2 for Autumn Semester 2011. Lecture 16, delivered on October 26, 2011. The title of this lecture is Marginal Cost of Capital Practicum.
Today, Marginal Cost of Capital Practicum. You have in your hands a Marginal Cost of Capital worksheet, and I will walk you through how you do this kind of a problem. This is capital budgeting, and it is not just plain old NPV analysis. It actually goes to the heart of how much it costs to finance projects versus how much they are going to return us. And the decision making goes to that level. Whether a project is accepted or not is whether or not its return on investment clears the cost at the margin of the capital needed to finance it. Now, here's why I'm doing it this way. I could tell you all the theory up front and then let you work your way through and use the theory, or I can have you see the formulas as we need them and as we use them. I've found that it's a lot better, and you actually learn it better if you use the formulas right away while you're doing a problem step by step. And it deepens your understanding in the long run. At least I hope it does. And I'm going to be thin on the theory, just enough so you understand why we are doing each step that we are doing in this. So as we begin our happy journey here on this topic, and where the hell are my glasses? There we are. Okay, we have the Stonewood products have a capital structure that's 35% debt and 65% common equity. Now, first things first. In other words, I've given you optimal capital structure. The company is going to keep that optimal capital structure. So as it needs money for a project, it is going to keep that capital structure. So in other words, if it needed $1 million, it will use 35% debt and 65% equity to achieve that amount of money at every given point along the way. Now remember that there are actually two flavors of equity. There is the old-fashioned way of raising equity, which is where you earn it. That's what we call internally generated equity. And then there is the other way to generate equity, which is to sell common stock, sell new issue. So we recognize that there's actually going to be three parts involved here. We're going to use debt, borrow at 35% of our financing needs at each step of the way. At each dollar, 35% will be debt and 65% will be equity. But that 65% equity, the first thing we will do is burn through the money that's at the net income line minus dividends. So we will burn debt and internally generated equity, and then when we exhaust our internally generated equity, we're going to have to borrow, or rather sell common stock, to get more equity to keep our mix going of debt and equity as we flow along. So what I have to do first here, as you read through the problem, and I'm sure you've already speed read through it, but what we're going to have to do is figure out a couple of different issues. First of all, the cost of debt, and there's going to be two costs to debt because they can borrow up, what did I say there, $750,000? No, I'm sorry, $250,000. They're going to be able to borrow $250,000 pretty cheap. In this case, pretty cheap is at 10%.
But then when they go above borrowing $250,000, the bank is going to say, here it is. You're getting a little scary here, so we're going to charge you a higher interest rate when you go above $250,000 in borrowing. Okay. And you say, that's okay, I understand. So we're going to have two costs of debt. One cost of debt at the lower tier, and then we're going to have a cost of debt at the higher tier. But remember that we can deduct interest on debt. So the first formula that I will write for you is the cost of debt after tax is going to be the cost of debt times 1 minus your tax rate, because you get to deduct interest. Your net cost of debt is going to be 1 minus T, your tax rate, times the bank's, what the bank is charging you, because the interest will be a tax shield for you. So in other words, we will have two tiers of debt. The cheaper debt, which will be case of D after tax 1, and then we'll have a case of D after tax 2, which will represent that more costly debt once we have smoked out the $250,000. So there you are. That's your first job in this problem, is to figure out your after-tax cost of debt at the lower tier and then at the higher tier. And if you do that, you would have 10%. What was their tax rate, 40%? Was that what it said in there? 40%. So we'll have 10% minus 1 minus 0.4, which will come out to be 6%. And then at the upper level, we'll have a 12% times 1 minus 0.4, which will come out to be 7.2%, I hope.
I think, yeah. Now, so those will be the two tiers of debt that we're facing. So you notice right there that our marginal cost of capital is going to be going up as we use more money, in other words, use more debt. Our marginal cost of capital is going to go up. Now we've got the next problem that we have to face. How do we calculate a cost of equity? Remember, there's going to be two costs of equity. There's going to be a cost of internally generated equity, that equity that we have after the net income, after we subtract out our dividends that we pay out. And then we're going to have a cost of new common stock. Now, here's why new common stock costs more than internally generated equity. When you issue new common stock, let's say that you issue common stock at $20 a share. You sell it at $20 a share. You know what? You're not going to, the company's not going to see $20 a share, because the brokers are going to cut their float out of it. We have to make a living. Truth be told, back in my time, we could screw companies over. In one case, we proposed, we never got to the point of financing. We simply said, we'll sell your common stock, and we're going to take 25% of whatever we sell. That was just what we did. And that was a rather ugly little few moments, because the two owners just bitched their heads off. 25% float, are you crazy? We just got up and walked out the door. They chased us into the parking lot and said, let's talk. So we gave them a deal, 20%. Anymore, you can't do that. So the float is something considerably less. What did I give you here? 8%?
Yeah. Float.
8%. Okay. So we'll use that in just a minute. But first I have to show you how to calculate the cost of equity. You remember that formula I gave you a few days ago, that the price you could find for a share of stock was dividend 1 over K minus G. You remember that formula?
Show me a sign that I'm not. Yes, you do remember it. That's how you find the cost of common stock, or the price of a share of common stock. And that's why that quiz was supposed to show up, and I forgot to unhide it, so I'll have to get that unhidden. But that worksheet you just did that I had up, yeah, that's how you find a price of a share of common stock. Okay, price of stock. Okay, watch what happens if I rearrange the formula. I'm just going to cross multiply so that K minus G is D1 over P. So the cost of the stock is the K sub S is D1 over P plus G. That's how you calculate internally generated equity cost. If I know the price, and I know the growth rate, and I know dividend 1, well, I can find the cost of internally generated equity. You're going to be surprised. The cost of internally generated equity is high. Equity is more expensive than debt, as you will see in a moment here. Now, I should caution you, remember you're using D1, not D0. I gave you the dividend, the current dividend. Do you see it there? What's the current dividend on this stock? What do you see? Look at it. $5 a share? Okay, great. Now, is that $5 a share? That's ridiculous.
Yep, $5 a share.
Okay. Okay, now, so we're going to have to figure out, okay, that's the dividend now. Now, I might actually give you the dividend one period out. I might throw it in here instead of saying they just paid. I might say, well, the dividend they plan to pay next year is. So watch it. If I tell you they paid it now, you've got to have D1, so you'll have to do, in this case, the cost of existing common stock equity is going to be D1, which would be $5 per share grown one period. What's the growth rate of this dividend? What did I say? What is it?
9%.
Really?
God!
0.09 divided by what's the price of the stock? Come on, what is it? $50 plus the growth rate, 0.09. That number might actually be wrong. I didn't mean to have a growth rate that high. That's a hellacious growth rate. Oh, well.
We'll see. My key might be wrong if I did. I had no intention of doing a growth rate. Oh, my ass. 5 times 1.09 divided by the price of the stock, $50 a share, plus the growth rate of 0.09. Yep, the key is wrong there. It says 19, it should be 19.9. Yep.
Because I wrote the quiz changing numbers in the key, and I must have kicked in a number from the key in the quiz. Or the quiz in the key. Okay, anyway, it's 19.9%. Scratch that number out that's on that key that's at the back of that thing and put 19.9. Yeah.
I think the $5, because it says dividend to be paid in 1 year. So
oh, I did do it in this problem. I apologize. Sometimes I won't give you. That explains. Yeah, I'm okay then. You're right. Sometimes I will give you D0. If I said they just paid a dividend, that's D0. If I say the dividend in the next period or in 1 year, that's already D1. That's
So I did have the key correct. Okay, $5, that's D1, over $50, P, plus the growth rate, 0.09, G, and that will indeed come out to be 19%. So I did do it okay. Okay, now, here's the deal, though. There's one last cost of equity, the cost of equity that we raise through selling stock. And that is going to be case of N, which is going to be the same formula, D1 over P, but you have to take out the float. You have to take out the flotation cost because the company won't get P $50 a share. It will get P minus how much the investment bankers take, and then plus G. So that will be the cost of new equity. Case of N, in this case, would be $5. That's D1 over $50 minus the float was, did I give 8% for the float? So what's 8% of $50? Four bucks. $4. Plus 0.09. So it will be D1 over P minus the float plus the growth rate. And if you calculate that, you'll get $5 divided by the quantity, 50 minus 4. Close that up and then add your 0.09. And you should get 19.89%. Two decimal places, okay? Yeah. Okay, the float is 8% of new issue price. Okay, so what is 8%? $50, we're going to assume. By the way, I'm actually glad you asked that question. I want to point out something, a little bit of real world. When you have your stock just out there, $50 a share, you have to be careful because what could happen to that price if you sell new stock? Yeah, because the supply of your stock increases, the price might drop. So realistically, we might argue that as long as it's a small issue compared to the total outstanding, yeah, you can hold that price at $50. But if you're going to issue a big block of new stock, you should expect that you wouldn't want to use $50. You might want to figure what the market's going to do with this big glob of new stock of yours out there. It could very well bring your stock down a little bit in price. I mean, for our purposes, we aren't going to do it. But just as a real-world kind of thing, always be sure that you're realistic with using the same $50 here that you use for internally generated equity up there. And if you get that, that comes out to be 19.89%, right? 87, my, oh. Whew. I was just testing you there. Okay, there you go. Once you get the hang of this is actually easy. I went through it. It took a while to go through it. But your formulas are just really straightforward for this. Just the only place where you can make a mistake, and this is true on the exam especially, this is the only place where you fall down, and it's a disaster to fall down here because you probably will get the rest of the problem wrong. Make sure you use the right D up there on top. D1, if I tell you the dividend next period, just put that number there. But if I tell you they just issued a dividend, then you got to back down and figure out what dividend is one period out. Now, I want to bring up one other thing here. Common stock is not the only kind of equity. You can also issue preferred stock.
So I could actually have another level of calculation in there, a calculation of the cost of preferred stock. Some companies use preferred stock as a vehicle for financing. Other companies don't. I know that among many companies, there's an aversion to using preferred stock to finance projects. And the reason is simple. You have to pay a dividend. I mean, it is almost like a bond. You pay that dividend, except unlike a bond, you pay it forever. That's the problem with preferred stock, and I generally don't use preferred stock. And on the exam, I wouldn't put in that, well, they'll also sell some preferred stock. In the book, they have preferred stock as one of the sources of capital. I don't do it, first of all, because it just makes the problem harder. But more practically speaking, a lot of companies really don't care to issue preferred stock. Like I said, once you issue preferred stock, you have to pay that dividend forever. You can't decide whether to or not. And also, you can't pay your common shareholders, who are usually the bitchier of your equity holders. You can't pay them unless you pay your dividends up on preferred. So think of common stock as like a decent relationship. Think of preferred stock as a marriage. And a marriage goes on forever, even in hell. That's right, gentlemen. You'll be in hell, she'll be in heaven, and they'll give you her a pipe that she can still yell at you. You're all covered with cinders. Okay? No, it's really not good because you're just married to it forever. And that's true of equity anyway. But preferred, I don't know. It's just not one of those. But I do want to point out something interesting here. Realistically speaking, you would probably, when a loan company, and this actually happened to me several times, see there the schedule of the amount of money and the break to the next amount of money? That's usually more than one jump. They'll give you a schedule, they'll say up to $250,000, this interest rate. Up to $1 million, this interest rate. Up to $2 million, this interest rate. So it'll have more than two levels. So you have more than two crossing points here. Okay? So, but for my purposes, two will be enough. Yeah.
So in this equation, you said that you clarified another dividend, they just paid a $5 dividend for both KS and
KS. It would have to be 50 times 1 plus 0.09. Oh, I'm sorry, five. I'm just testing your ass. Yeah, five times one plus 0.09. Okay, yeah. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, so if you give us the D0, how do you convert to the D1?
You just do one plus the growth rate. $5 times one plus 0.09. Or 1.09. In other words, you just grow $5 one period at 9%. So it's five times one plus 0.09. Now, and like I said, I can throw it at you in a couple of different ways. This is just one. I can throw it to you the way I did here, which made it a little easier, and I forgot I was going to make the first round easier. And then I can throw it at you a little bit harder with the D0. Most likely on the exam, no, not most likely. On the exam, I will give you D0, okay? Here I gave you the D1 to make it easy, but I'm kind of glad you brought that up. I'm just going to tell you right now. On the exam, I would give you D0. So you would have to grow it one period or everything goes wrong after that. Now let me take you on through the meat grinder. The part of this problem that gets people the most is this. What we call the breakpoints. The breakpoints are where you have to switch and use another one of your available financing vehicles. Remember, at any step of the way, every dollar you spend, 35% of it is going to come from the bank borrowing. And 65% of it is going to come from the shareholders' money. First, you'll have the internally generated equity, and then after that, you'll have to issue new common stock. But you will never deviate from that 35-65% mix all along the way. So what I have to do is find out where my breakpoints are. I'm going to borrow, I can borrow up to $250,000. Up to $250,000 I can borrow at the cheap interest rate, at the lowest cost of capital. Now you see, that's $250,000, which would be 35% of how much money I would spend on that first level of capital. $250,000, I would be using that as 35% of my total capital mix. So the reason I wrote what I just did up there, and I'll erase it and I'll explain, what I'm really saying is that $250,000 is what percent, is what amount at 35% of my total capital burn on the first level. We call that X is the breakpoint. So in other words, that is my first breakpoint. $250,000 would be 35% of some amount of money that I would burn up. So in other words, $250,000 divided by 0.35 is breakpoint one. $250,000. In other words, if $250,000 is 35% of how much I can use up on my first level of capital, then I would say that that means, survey says, $250,000. You know what? I can't even see this thing. That's because the lights are off again. I keep coming in here thinking I've had a small stroke because I can't see anything. There.
Divide by 0.35. That's $714,285.71.
In other words, and again, and it takes a while for this to soak in. For some of you, you'll see it right away. Others, like me, it took a while. If 35% of my money is debt that I'm using, that means that I would have to go through $714,000 for $250,000 of it to be debt. Because, yeah, go ahead. It was the first level of the cost of capital. See the debt? See, I know the bank says that I can get cheap debt up to $250,000. So I'm going to borrow up to $250,000, but that's going to be 35% of the money that I'm burning on my first level. So what essentially I'm saying is that I could, my first level, my cheapest that I can run would be $714,285.71 if 35% of it is debt and $250,000 is what I can borrow cheap. You just take the amount of money that's cheap divided by the debt component of your capital structure. Okay. Now, what that means, then, is that essentially, and this is one way to do it, and I've never really found a way that hits everyone's goosey spot perfectly, but the way I do it is like this. I'm going to be taking on projects, and I'm going to have to spend money for them. And as I spend that money, 35% is going to come from the bank borrowed, And 65% is going to come from the shareholders, either through net income minus dividends or through selling common stock. So essentially, what's going to happen here is that I have, and where the hell, oh, there we go. Let's try it. An actual cost of cap, money that I'm spending. But that money is a mix of two kinds of money, borrowed and equity. So that red line is actually comprising two different kinds of money. There will be the debt kind of money, which will be 35 cents of every dollar that I use. And then there will be the equity money, which will be 65% of every dollar I use. So what I want to know is when I have spent, $250,000 of debt money. The answer to that is, from what I see there, that is $714,285. Because $250,000 of that is 35%. That's why I did that divided by 0.35 there. And then that would, this other amount, the equity, would be the rest of it. But then that means, okay, when do I hit my wall within, and then my, I have to borrow at a higher rate. See, at $250,000, if I spend a total of $714,285, I will have spent $250,000 of borrowed money, and suddenly I will have the bank hit me for a higher interest rate. So that's why I call that breakpoint one, because that's where my first jump in my marginal cost of capital occurs, is at breakpoint one. I now know that when I have finished spending $714,285.71, I know for a fact that I have now spent my way to a higher cost of capital, because the bank's going to hit me now, say, oh, you've borrowed $250,000. You can keep borrowing, but now you borrow at a higher rate. The next question is, when do I hit the wall with the money that I have generated through my sales? In other words, I've got money at the bottom line. What did it say my net income was? In this problem, what was it? I can't. 1.2 mil. Okay. Well, happy days. That's fine. I have $1,250,000 net income. That's not how much I've got to spend, though, because I mentioned that I have to pay the shareholders a dividend, right? Okay, so I paid the shareholders a dividend. Well, that means that I'm going to have to take out that dividend before I see how much I've got to plow back. How many shares of stock were there? How many, 40? 40? Okay, 40,000 shares. How much did I give in the per share dividend? So how much did I pay out in dividends total? 200,000, right? So my plowback earnings, what I have available to spend on new projects, is $1 million. What I have available to spend on projects is $1 million in internally generated equity. In internally generated equity, I got $1 million. Now remember that I'll be mixing that with debt money. But that $1 million that I've got, that I have earned net of dividends, that'll be 65% of anything that I do. So I can now say, okay, $1 million is what that amount of 65% of total spending. That is breakpoint two, where I have to now sell new stock because I've used up all the money I had for projects. I had $1 million of internally generated equity. In other words, money that the company had earned net of paying the dividend, I had $1 million. That will be 65% of some value. So I can now say that $1 million over 0.65 is breakpoint two. That's breakpoint two. Remember, no matter how I give you the problem, I'll give you the net income, and then you have to take away whatever it is I give you for the dividend. Sometimes I'll give you you'll have to calculate the dividend, number of shares times dividend per share. In other cases, I'll actually simply say they paid a total of dividend off. So just remember that you have to take their net income and you have to take out the dividend that is to be paid. Okay, here we go. So breakpoint two comes at a value, and where the hell did I put my, there it is. $1 million divided by 0.65, which comes out to be $1,538,461.54 is my breakpoint two. That's breakpoint two. In other words, when I have spent a total on projects of $1,538,462, I have to start selling new common stock. Again, when I have spent a total of $1,538,461.54, I have to now make a new issue of common stock because I've used up all my income net of dividends. I've burned through that. So first, I burned through my first tier of cheap debt, and then at $714,285, I have to borrow at a higher rate. And then, as I keep cruising along, I've still got a lot of net income at that point. I've still got more net income that I'm going to be able to use. But once I get to this point right here, suddenly I've got my next problem. I've run out of money that I earned through operations, which means that I now have to issue common stock to keep going. In other words, I have to really jump in my cost of capital at this point. So when you do the breakpoints, first you do your jump in debt, where that value is, divided by the percentage of debt in the capital structure. Again, the first breakpoint is where your debt jumps in cost, that amount of money divided by the percentage of debt in your capital structure. Your second jump occurs where you have burned through your earnings after dividend divided by the percent of equity in your capital structure. Again, the second breakpoint is where you have used up all of your earnings net of dividends divided by the percentage of equity in your capital structure. It sounds a lot more complicated than it is. If you think about what I'm doing behind all my words and my bullshit, it actually is just really mechanical calculations. Now we finally have got everything where we can be happy. We have now gotten to the point where we can calculate our marginal costs of capital. Your first marginal cost of capital, which actually is your weighted average cost of capital, this first marginal cost of capital, where your cost of money starts, will be WACC, the weighted average cost of capital. That's a fun question to ask in the multiple choice section of an exam. Not that I will, but I will. You say that again, I don't listen to you. Just, yeah. The weighted average cost of your marginal cost of capital, one. Your first marginal cost of capital, that's actually just your weighted average cost of capital. That thing I was talking about last lecture. And it will be your first cost of debt times the weight of debt in your capital structure, plus your cost of common stock in your times your weight of stock in the capital structure. So, practically speaking, what that will be, the first marginal cost of capital will be 6% times 0.35 plus 19% times 0.65.
Six times 0.35, grr, plus 19. God, that's expensive equity. 19 times 0.65 is 14.45%. That is your first tier of the cost of capital, 14.45%. Okay?
Now, your marginal cost of capital, two, remember, at your first break point, you have to borrow at a higher rate. You're still using your internally generated equity, your net income minus dividend. You still got that. So you're still using your cheaper equity. But at the marginal cost of capital two, you will be calculating based upon the cost of debt on the second level of debt times the weight of debt plus the cost of your normal stock, the common internally generated equity, times the weight of stock. The weights will not change because your capital structure isn't going to change. That's exactly the point of this, is to hold your capital structure exactly where it is. So, all that happens here is that you jump to your higher cost of debt, 7.2%, times the weight of debt, 0.35, plus you're still using your cheaper equity at 19%, times 0.65. See, because all that's happened is now you have to borrow, to keep going with investments, you have to borrow money at a higher rate. So what will come out of this one is 7.2 times 0.35 plus 19 times 0.65, and that comes out to be 14.87%. Now, that's not too bad a jump there. Now, you see, well, there were a couple of reasons. One reason that you notice that's not a terrible jump in your cost of investing. Do you see it? The main reason is that basically your stock is your most expensive gorilla in the jungle. And I didn't change the cost of that because I'm still using my internally generated equity. On the third tier, though, now we are paying the big price for everything. The marginal cost of capital, 3, is going to be the cost of debt, after-tax cost of debt, on the second level, because we're now borrowing everything at the higher price, times the weight of debt in the capital structure, plus we're selling common stock, so it will be the cost of new issue equity times the weight of stock in the capital structure. So this is where we get hit hard, because we're borrowing more expensive money, 7.2%, for 35% of financing, and we are selling stock, which has a cost of 19.87% for 65% of our financing. And if you do that, 7.2 times 0.35 plus 19.87 times 0.65, that's 15.44%. So there you are. Those are your three costs of capital. Now, here's the deal. Now, we can talk about, well, what could we spend this money on? Oh, well, we have some projects. So what I'm going to need to do is order those projects from the one that gives us the highest return on investment to the one that gives us the lowest return on investment. The result will be what is called an investment opportunity schedule. From the best dog in the litter down to the runt of the litter, we simply rank them. Okay, we've got one here. If I look at them, I would rank project D, as in doggy, first, because it is an 18% project. So on the investment opportunity schedule, on the investment IOS, I would first put project D, which is going to cost $1.5 million, and the return on it is going to be
18%.
Yeah, 18%.
Then I go and find my next best project. And I would see that that's project A, which is going to cost $500,000.
And it returns, what, 16% was it? 16%?
And then I see that I've got this project C, I'm going to have to spend $600,000 on it,
and it's going to cost me 15%.
I'm sorry, it's going to return me 15%. And then bringing up the rear, is this actually quite expensive project B at what is that, 1.6 million?
Yeah, 1,600,000. And that guy gives us only 12%. That doesn't mean we kick it out right away. You don't know. Because we are now going to do what is called an MCCIOS graph. And yeah, we actually did these back in the day, and I know of an Excel spreadsheet that's still used by internal company finance people that actually plots this out. We'll do it by hand. Now, this is where, remember last time I told you to have a ruler? Now, if you don't have one, I'm going to come around and give wedgies for that. You need a ruler. Trust me, noobs, because some of these... Here's what's going to happen. The marginal cost of capital graph is going to be going up tier by tier. The investment opportunity graph right on top of it is going to be going down. You want to see where the two cross. And if you do not graph it with precision, with delicacy, with grace, in fact, you might miss, because you will be surprised at how often it is a real close call on a project. Did that project finish up before the graph, the marginal cost of capital graph jump, or did it finish up after the jump? And you really have to get precise on these. Now, here's step one for graphing. Step one. Make these nice little lines, and you should make them fairly thin so that they don't get too much in the way, at your breakpoints, breakpoint one and breakpoint two. Now, I've given you a graph there that's already scaled. If you look at that graph, you'll see that you're going to have to decide. How much total money could I end up spending here? Would be 1,500,000 plus 500,000 is 2 million, plus 600,000 is 2,600,000 plus 1,600,000. So you could spend a total possible of 4,200,000. So the graph, the scale at the bottom, has to go make it up to at least 4,200,000. So 1.52, 2.5. I set it up so that the best scale would probably be $500,000 increments. Okay? So the bottom scale should be each tick mark, you should make 500,000. This goes to old fashioned graphing. Deciding on what your scale is and all that kind of stuff. And then, once you've got your scale down there, you can plot in your breakpoints. Your first breakpoint, you would make a perfectly vertical line. Don't be a slob grapher. A perfectly vertical line. Actually, I do almost like a little dotted line. Up from at each breakpoint, and just take it up to the top of the graph. Make it pretty. Mom is going to put this on the refrigerator. Relatives will see this. Okay, the first one you will plot at $714,000. And then the second breakpoint would be at $1,538,000. Now, obviously, you're going to have a little room for error there. You're not going to be perfect about this, okay? But you need to be about as perfect as possible. How are you doing? You got that okay? Okay, now we can put in, and this, don't attack it. Your scale, look, your costs and your returns are varying up to about 20%, right? About, you see how your costs and your returns the highest return was like 18%. So what I would do, I made that scale so that you could do each tick mark on the vertical axis as 1%. Now the first thing you're going to do there is, and here I'm not practicing what I preach, you've got your breakpoints, BP1 and BP2. Now, and I do these, actually, it sounds stupid, but I do these with different colored pencils. And it looks kind of lame, but, you know, what the heck. The first thing you would do is your first marginal cost of capital. What did that come out to be? 14.45%? You actually draw in a heavy line up to your first breakpoint, because you will be 14.45% money up to the first breakpoint. That's what the breakpoint is. It's where the marginal cost of capital would jump. You see that? Do not draw it any further than that. Stop there. Now, from that first breakpoint to the second breakpoint, your marginal cost of capital is now 14.47%. So you are going to draw a horizontal line between breakpoint 1 and breakpoint 2 at 14.47%. You see it? You just draw it between those two poles, because between 714,000 and 1,580,000, you're paying marginal cost of capital 2. And then on the other side of breakpoint 2, that's when you're paying at the highest marginal cost of capital, 15.44%. So after breakpoint 2, you just draw in from there on, all the way to infinity, 15.44%. Do you see how the marginal cost of capital is like a rising thing? This was the answer to the Modigliani-Miller problem. The marginal cost of capital, which is what we have to think about, is rising because our cost of financing rises. And it rises because debt gets more expensive, but because we don't have an infinite amount of net income. Sooner or later, we have to sell common stock to keep financing projects. What you have just done there is called the MCC graph. Now, all you have to do is the IOS graph. How much money did you have to spend on your best project? Good. So all you're going to do at this point is you're going to draw in an 18% line, a nice fat 18% line, up to $1,500,000, right? And then, once you're finished with that project, you go on and start financing your next project. How much did the next best project cost? $500,000. And what was the return on that one? 16%? Right? Okay. So, after $1,500,000, you have to go another $500,000 at 16%. Look at that. Isn't that interesting? And then our next best project, we have to spend another $600,000, and we get 15% for that one. And then the worst project cost us $1,600,000 more and it ran us at 12%. And then I would label them, by the way, just to, so you can find your own butt using both hands on a roadmap, A, D, A, C, and B. Okay, talk to me. I will take on projects D and A, and I will reject projects C and B. Why? Why? Say it. Yeah. Because those two projects, they will cost me more than I will make from them. They are both hanging below their marginal cost of capital. To finance project C, it's going to cost me 15.44%. That whole damn project is going to run 15.44% money. There's no way. I'm going to say, bite me. Because the project only delivers 15%. And, I mean, B is a dog barking at the door. You shoot it. Because it's 12%, and the cost of the money to finance it would be 15.44%. No. So I will simply say, when I say, what projects do you accept? Why say I accept only the projects that are completed above their marginal cost of capital. Again, let me emphasize that statement. I will take on the projects that are completed above their marginal cost of capital. In other words, look at this A. If the marginal cost of capital had jumped during A, I would have rejected it. I have to complete the project above its marginal cost of capital, or I will reject it. If any part of A, even the fart trail of A, had been above its marginal cost of capital, I would have said no. You got a whole weekend to do this. It'll keep you off the streets, your quiz. That's all I have for you today. I thank you.